Well, first of all, thanks for joining. And my name is Jean Donati. I'm a program manager with the Microsoft project team and responsible for the resource management features in the product, working on the next release as well. So if you have any requests or pain points, just follow up with me after the session. Today, I'm co-presenting with Rob Hirschman.
Howdy. Rob with Progility. We're a gold-certified PPM partner. We specialize in the implementation and support of the platform. A lot of the work we do is around resource planning and resource management. So we're going to try to make a lot of the things Gene talks about, make it real and show you, what the realities are with different clients, how they're using the tool, and take you through really a full life cycle and how you can do different things with the resource management capabilities.
So we'll cover this different topics. So basically, what are the key challenges that people face today with resource management, and what does it mean from a business standpoint, technical standpoint? Then I will cover, and Rob will cover that. I'll cover what the tool provides out of the box. What's the tool portion of the tool process people try out, I would say, and what are the key features that would support this resource management practices in Project Server and Project Online. And then we'll finish that with a demo. We'll keep as much time as possible for the demonstration, and we'll wrap it up with a case study. Without further ado, I'll let Rob talk about what is strategic resource management.
Cool. And so hopefully some of the themes we're going to talk about and you'll get out of today is when we talk about strategic resource planning and resource management, it's really all about a procedure and a process. It's not so much about a tool. And if you don't have a good process or procedure in place, the tool isn't going to do you a lot of good. A lot of parts of project are very well governed, and they come with a process in them. Resource management is one of those areas where if I talk to five different companies, they do it in five different ways. And a lot of it ties back to your process, your culture, how your people work, and how they interact with each other. So one of the themes is that you have to establish a process. Tools like Project Online, Project Server can be very, very helpful, but it really depends on how you do business and how your people are going to interact with each other, how you're going to use those tools. So we're going to demonstrate some of the components. We're going to talk about how the different pieces work together and show them to you. Every organization is different, as I managed. And documenting your process and understanding how you want to go about doing resource planning and the areas you want to improve will help you better use those tools. If you expect to turn on Project Server and it to help you do resource planning out of the box, you're probably going to be disappointed. But if you do some planning and you have a lot of options, you understand those options, you can use the tools in the right way. Just to give you an overall definition of what we're talking about, so when we're talking about strategic resource planning and resource management, it's a documented process or procedure by which an organization manages its people, its equipment, different types of resource, anything or anybody that would work on a project at any point in time, or any non-project activity. So we're going beyond just project work into non-project work. We find a lot of IT and business organizations spend 40-50% of their time not on projects, but on other activities. Whether it's break fix, keep the lights on, administrative stuff, doing special work for certain people, you're doing that. You have to be able to track all of your work across all of your different kind of work. It requires discipline, and the biggest thing here is the word communication. And hopefully you've gotten that over the last 3 days. The tool does not replace communication, but it can give you the data and the information to help make communication much more useful and much more practical. And you can get a good governance structure in place, put it in your organization, you can start to do better resource planning and resource management. So when we start looking at different kinds of organizations, how many of you work in an organization that's functional, purely functional today? Okay.
IT.
IT. You're the 5%. Okay. How many people work in a project-based organization? Okay. A couple more. Right. And project-based organizations, they're still very popular. They were really popular in the 90s. We saw kind of a bump up in that as PMI got a lot more popular. People started to projectize their businesses. That took a little bit of a crash around 2000, but there are still project-based organizations. A lot of project or program-based organizations are professional services firms. Is anybody from a professional services firm at all? Okay. Yeah, there you go. How many of you work in matrixed organizations? You are the 90%. See? The numbers add up pretty well, right? We've moved to really a matrix-based organization model where you have different functional managers, different people are working for different folks at different times. So you may have a manager, but you may be doing work for other people in the organization. Does that all sound pretty familiar? Yep. And that presents a lot of challenges when you talk about resource planning and resource management. Does everybody use the same system to do the resource planning? What do you all use today? Alyssa? Project. Anyone else? Excel? Excel's pretty popular. Why? Because it's easy, you can plug your numbers in, stuff like that. Okay. So when we start looking at that, the real business problem we see when we talk about resource planning is you've got really two sides of the coin. You've got the individuals and the groups that are the project owners. What do they want? They want results, right? They have a mission. They have a business case. They've got money. And they know they need certain people to meet their goals to get the results they're looking for. And they want to do this project to get the results they're looking for. On the other side of that, we've got our functional managers, which can be resource managers. They can be people who own different functions. But you work for the resource manager or the functional manager in some case, where they're managing the people, they're managing the utilization, they know the skills different people have, right? They know the specializations, and they're really responsible for managing those people when their people are out on loan to different parts of the business or the organization. So you can see there's an inherent challenge between these two different parties that have very different interests. There's almost a conflict there, especially in a matrixed organization. Hopefully this looks familiar to some folks. A lot of head nodding. That's good. So the challenges really are, when we look at organizational resources, they're controlled by multiple groups and multiple departments that have different interests throughout the whole life cycle. The resources often work across boundaries. So one resource may be working on three or four different projects using their skills in four or five different ways. So they're really, they're specialists in different areas, and they end up touching different parts of the business. I could be working for the finance group, but at the same time I'm doing a project for operations, two for IT, and maybe one back over here for finance as well. So I'm always doing that. We also find that those non-project activities can take a lot of a person's time. And in order to really get a sense for what resources are working on, you have to be able to track all of their work. So being able to capture all that in a single system, in a single application, becomes very, very important. And that's where tools like Project Server and Project Online can be very, very useful. Tracking happens, if it even happens, in a timesheet. Does everybody have timesheets in your organization? Okay. And are those project-based timesheets? Are they organizational timesheets? Are they tied into your project management system, I guess is the question. No.
Mm-hmm.
You are. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, they're usually in two different systems, right? You have a timesheet system over here. You have your project management system over here. You've got a lot more data and detail here, but you've got a summary here, but I have to charge time here. There's challenges with that kind of an environment. And the key for, you know, a good project management organization is understanding all the work an individual has, right? So you have to be able to unify that information into a common data source, whether it's reporting, business intelligence, integrating it into a project server. There's lots of different approaches to that. Management always wants more information, right? They want to know exactly why work isn't getting done. And usually it's because you don't have the people or the people are overutilized in some way. You have to be able to prove that out. And the only way you can prove that out is to have the data. Finally, reporting is usually very, very manual, right? It's in spreadsheets, Excel, it's all over the place. People are looking for technology to help out. So we start looking at that, we start looking at what systems people have. Tell me if any of this stuff looks familiar. Spreadsheets, you know, we have our spreadsheet, we have our resources, we put in kind of FTE utilization, it does some calculations, we get a nice little chart in Excel, we come over here and we map that out to our projects and our future projects, and we can kind of do some highlighting and graphing, and we have different tabs. If we make a mistake in one part of that spreadsheet, God only knows what's going to happen, right? The whole thing's going to blow up. So we end up with big, massive spreadsheets, right? Owned by some person who's in finance or HR. We don't know how accurate the information is, but we have to use that stuff for forecasting. Right? This is where project portfolio management applications can really help out. They're going to help you unify the information. So one of the things we did is we've been in this business since 2005. We actually did a survey, and we went back and looked at RFPs, RFQs we got, and client questionnaires over the past 5.5 years, and we looked, you know, what do people have in common? What are the requirements that most organizations have? And it's interesting because project management is always number one. Everybody wants to solve a project management problem with a project management system. The second one is resource management, believe it or not. Even over portfolio management, even over collaboration, even over reporting, people want to solve the resource management problem. And it's interesting, does anybody read the Gartner reports on PPM? Yeah, they talk a lot about project and portfolio. They don't talk a lot about resource management, right? There's no resource portfolio management magic quadrant. There really should be when you think about it. That's the biggest challenge most people face, right? They don't have enough people to do the work that they have coming in, and they have to be much more choosy or more effective about what they're doing. So resource management has really risen to the top for a lot of organizations as really the key driver behind these systems. So a little bit of a methodology, and you know, we've been working with a lot of clients around this. What we found is there's really two sides to the resource management challenge, how you can address it. There's the data side, which is the information you're going to capture in the system you're going to use, but there's also the conversation side. And it's just as, if not more important, to go down this road and understand what's important in the organization. The data side is going to tell us, I need information. I need to make decisions. I need to know how many FTEs do I have, what is their availability, what are their total hours, what work have they submitted. I need to do analysis. I need some tools to do what if and say, well, if I had four FTEs that are analysts and I've got work coming in where I require five, should I move the work out? Should I actually bring people from the outside? What should I do to make sure I can do the work that I'm committing to for the business? And finally, I need workflow. I need some kind of tools that will route information for approvals to say, yes, Jim said I could have this resource. How am I going to capture that information? The conversation side is just as, if not more important. Even if you have good data, if you don't have a communication and conversation with the people that own the resources, you're not going to get the people, right? So establishing a good methodology around how you're going to manage communications and how you're going to do what we call social bartering, because the reality is you're going to have to work with people internally to get their resources to work with you, right? You have to come up with that social compact internally to say, I've got this information, I'd really like your person on this project, how can we work this out so it works for everybody? And really developing a good conversation-based approach, understanding the politicking, doing the problem solving is over half of the challenge here with resource management. So while we'll be able today to show you a system that can help solve some of your challenges, understanding that this part is just as important. And just overall, from an input process output perspective, on the data side, you know, we'll get a request for a resource, right? Someone comes in, and when we go through our demo, we'll show you this. You know, I need two analysts, I need three developers, I need a project manager over this period of time. That's the data-driven request. On the conversation side, it's all about discussion. Then I have to sit down with the managers, put the information out, and go, well, we've got requests. We need 10 analysts on these projects for finance. How are we going to staff that? And that conversation has to happen. There's no technology that can replace that. On the process side, we're going to accept some kind of a request that comes in. We're going to analyze that request and the impact on the resource load and the business as a whole. And then we're going to go in and do create different kinds of assignments. We're going to assign people to work. The conversation is all about, I need these people. I'm going to negotiate what else they're working on. I'm going to have to trade off and swap them in and out of existing work or move work out in some way. I have to do an evaluation, and then I have to tie this into how my projects are being managed to make sure I'm not impacting other high visibility projects. So there's an element of portfolio management that we're going to show you in our demo as well. And finally, it's all about progress tracking. Everybody wants reports out of this. You want to get away from the spreadsheets, get more into data-driven stuff. So with that, we're monitoring and adjusting. We're discussing information with our different managers. It's really a collaboration and communication. So hopefully this will give you some ideas if you have some challenges around resource management. Really aligning the data and the conversation are really, really important. Got it. Successful organizations, and hopefully you saw a couple of them in the last couple days, they do both of these very, very well, and they understand their constraints in both areas, that there's only so much you can do, and you want to have the data, and you also want to have the conversation and grow those relationships. So with that in mind, just going to give you an eye chart here, because it's the last day, and I thought I'd give you a trick. The first thing you want to do when you're thinking about your resource management process is actually map it out. Make it very visual, create some different streamlines, swim lanes, put the roles in there, and map out your entire life cycle. And as you're mapping out your project management life cycle, you want to start thinking about what parts of those processes relate to resource management. For instance, when I build my project basis of estimate or my ROM, am I estimating resources? If I'm estimating resources at one stage in that, what am I doing to estimate my resources? What does that process flow look like? Who do I interact with at different phases of that? What questions am I asking? And then what information am I asking for back, and where am I getting that information back from? So doing some basic process mapping in the beginning, understanding the process you have internally, then trying to reflect that in a PPM application is really the best practice. Again, if you're relying on the PPM application to solve that problem, it's going to be a challenge. But if you go at it with this in mind, I can take different parts of Project Online and Project Server and make them work for what you want to do. Once you've mapped out your process, you then want to put all the procedures behind it, what activities are there, describe the specific activities, talk about who performs the very specific activity, what is the requirement, and by the way, how do I want to use Project Server to reflect that? Oh, Jesus. So is it something that's manual? Is it collaboration? Is it security? Is it procedure? Is it someone actually going in and requesting a resource? Do I fill in a form? What do I do at what stage? And then I can configure the application to meet the specific requirements I have. So again, doing that basic process mapping, understanding your requirements and your procedures can really help you get a leg up on doing resource planning. Make sense? Okay. So with that, back to you, my friend.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me? Perfect. So Now, Project Online or Project Server is a toolbox, right? And it's a rich, feature-rich toolbox. And Microsoft provides a tool to support the processes that you have. The thing is, sometimes it might be daunting, like we have a lot of features, and you don't have to use them all to support your processes. And this is where a partner can help out to help you figure out, okay, what do I really need to support my process and how I need to, how I should use it. So I just wanted to present like the set of resource management features we have in a product that pretty much everybody uses and how they can help you support your processes. One of the first thing that is important and is actually one of the main reasons people decide to deploy a PPM solution is to have everybody in the same system, to have a common repository for resources. This is what we call the Enterprise Resource Pool in Project Online and Project Server. To avoid using local resources like we have in Project today when we have separate files across network shares and stuff like this. So with an online solution or a server solution, you have all your resources in the same database. We provide options to sync that with some AD groups or you can import an Excel file just to populate that in the first place. This is also one of the main questions people ask when they start deploying Project Online or Project Server in the organization, and multiple departments want to have their own instance. They're like, okay, so should I have one instance per department or should I have just a single instance? There's one single question that can help you solve that problem. The question is, are people from Department A ever going to work on projects from Department B? If the answer is yes, you need a single instance. If not, then they can have separate instances, and sometimes it may have benefits. Just to give you an example, within Microsoft IT, after we launched Project Online, we've offered Project Online as a project management, a self-service for all of Microsoft. And within a couple of months, I mean, as of today, I think we have about 900 hosted instances of Project Online for our internal departments. Some consulting department in France or marketing group launching campaigns, they have nothing to do with each other, so they have their own instances. So we have 900 internal customers for Project Online. The second concept is, so in this resource pool, obviously, so you have all the people in your organizations, but you might want to create different types of resources. One of the core concepts of resource management in a product is, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with that, the concept of generic resources. Generic resources represent usually roles, and they map to name resources, to actual people. This is what you use. This is what project managers use to basically map out their requirements for a proposal or the early stages of a project. And this is also the foundation for the resource, the portfolio analysis, the resource constraint analysis, which is a little bit more advanced concept, but basically you usually do your constraint analysis on a role per role basis, not with name resources. Another core concept, I should say, it's more of a core concept of Project Online and Project Server in general. Like, you obviously have custom fields for projects and tasks, but in the context of resource management, so resource custom fields in this case are very important in many ways. This is what will help you map people with generic resources. Usually you pick a field, a specific resource custom field that would make that match possible, usually based on roles, but you can pick the RBS, for instance. So anybody on a specific RBS node or on a specific role node would map to a single generic resource. I just mentioned RBS. This is also a very important field in a product because this is, you can drive a lot of security features and permissions based on RBS. Things like, what is the visibility of a single project manager out of, let's say you have 1,000 projects in the system and I'm a PM in Department A. If you want to restrict that project manager to see projects in that specific department or resources in that specific department, you would basically use project permission mode and use the dynamic security features of the RBS to restrict the visibility of projects and resources. So this is a very important concept. Another thing that's important to note is the last bullet point here is you also would use custom fields to integrate with other systems. Whether you need to integrate with an ERP system or HR system, a homegrown solution, if you want to transfer data from like a homegrown timesheet system to project server, you would need to know, okay, the resource ID in that homegrown system maps to the resource ID in project server. So you'd use custom fields at a resource level to do this mapping. Same with projects, if you interact with SAP PS or if you have your timesheets in CATS and stuff like this, you would, most of the solutions that some of our partners provide would make extensive use of custom fields to map the data together. Resource plans. So this is another important feature that was introduced in 2007. The feedback that we got at the time was when project managers and even resource managers plan projects in the very early stages, we don't have a schedule, we don't have tasks, and we don't have assignments, and yet we need to plan how many people I'm going to use, and usually this is at this stage it's done by role, or in this case by generic resources, which map to roles, and it really simplifies the high-level planning in those very early stages of the project. As you can see, this is pretty simple. Looks like an Excel spreadsheet, actually. You can choose your granularity level by month, by week, or quarter, and you have one row per role, and it's just input the time you think you're going to need in terms of hours or FTEs or unit, depending on what your organization prefers. Another important thing is the data that's going to be added here and all those resource plans are later are going to be used by, like, for instance, portfolio planner and the resource constraint analysis. This is another key concept about resource plan is that it's somehow disconnected from the schedule. So you can really start building your resource plan without actually having a schedule, which is the whole point of the system. And usually, as soon as the project has been approved and went through all those selection gates and is fully funded and started, then you would basically switch to the schedule in the assignment in the project for utilization calculation and stuff like this. I just mentioned resource constraint analysis, which is a little bit a more advanced concept, but we're going to talk about this during the demo, so I thought I would just mention this. This is more like the high-level analysis across different projects, different departments of like how many people you're going to use, and whether or not you have enough people to do the projects that have been approved. We talk about portfolio analysis in the introduction. If you don't do this in portfolio analysis, you have two options. You can select project by cost. Do I have the money to do things? And the second option is, or you can do both, is do I have the people to do this? If you have the money but you don't have the people, it's not going to do you any good. So this part is really important as well. And finally, the picture wouldn't be complete if I didn't mention the resources themselves. You might go up to tracking time for your resources and let them enter the time and enter actual. But time tracking is not just about entering actual. One of the key benefits of implementing time tracking in a system is it makes team members and so resources in this case to be engaged and to be actors in the system. They, in addition to entering time, they could also change remaining work, or they can notify the project manager that something is not going to be delivered on time. So this is a very important part of the process. PMs need to know ahead of time if things are going to be delivered on schedule or not. So these are the key tools, I should say, in our toolbox. I didn't cover everything, but these are the concept that we're going to show in the demo right now.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
So who wants to see some software? Anyone? Let's show some software. So we're going to start out by doing a work initiation. We're actually going to go in and pick a project type. We're going to build a resource plan based off that. So we're doing an early phase FTE estimate for the types of resources I need for a potential project. We're then going to go do capacity and demand analysis in the resource center. Then we're going to do some portfolio analysis and do the what if around different resource constraints. So we're going to hit the portfolio analysis there. Then we're going to do some my task tracking and then also some BI and some reporting. So we're going to try to take you through the whole life cycle so you can see some of the different possibilities. Start to maybe internalize how these things might fit with your organization because certain parts might work really well. So just so you know, I've got two side-by-side environments here. The blue is an on-premise project server. The green is actually Project Online. And you'll see the functionality is pretty much the same. So start with our on-premise. Just everybody's familiar with 2013. So I'm going to go in, and I'm going to initiate a new project request. And how I'm going to do that is new. I'm going to pick a project type. I'm going to do a standard project request here. And a form is going to come up. Then I can say what's the request source for it. Maybe it's coming from the business or IT. I can say who's the client for it. Maybe I've got internal clients. I've got portfolios. I want to give it a start date. You know, I want to start this thing in a week. I've got the project departments field, which we're all familiar with, which is going to carry out throughout the application, capture other information such as what is the classification or the type of the project. So maybe it's a software development project. Is it for a specific product or a program? You'll see there's a couple of fields here that are pretty important if you want to do any resource forecasting. The first one is work type. Starting to delineate the different types of project work you are going to do, even down to is it project work, development work, enhancement work, breaking those up so you can start to see what the request load is based on the project type becomes very, very important.
And these are the project custom fields that these are, we just talked about.
Exactly.
We provide some custom fields out of the box, mm-hmm. but the main point of custom fields is they should be custom. So you should work with a partner with the experience to help you out, like define, okay, what are the key custom fields that you want to create in the system? What are the values? And depending on the departments, you might have different custom fields.
Yep. And there's one here. There's one is mandatory. So there's a field built in called a resource plan. Is there a resource plan for this or not? In this case, I haven't built one, so it's going to default to a no. And another one is, does it require staffing? Some of the organizations we work with, they want to have a resource manager go in and look at a dashboard and just quickly see all the projects that need staffing and don't. Well, if this requires staffing, let's say yes. Then we're going to continue down our process here. We're going to build a resource plan, and then when a resource manager goes in, they can go to the project center, and I'll show you, they'll just have a dashboard of all the projects they need to staff. So we're using the same tools to just provide visibility into the information. And again, these are just standard custom fields. There's no customization built here. So it's creating our project landing page, picked our project type, setting up our project request. And all the magic is happening in the background. Now we have our page coming up. There we go. So everybody's familiar with this. We have some workflow. We have a little bit of governance behind where we are in the life cycle. We've set up some benefits tracking and estimates and things like that. But where we want to go now is this option called a resource plan. And a lot of folks aren't familiar with this. It was first built in the 2007 version. Didn't work so well. It was kind of true. It wasn't well connected, I would say. What? It was V1. It was a great concept, right? But it was there. It was a way you could forecast demand. But it didn't really go anywhere, right? Now, with 2010, it was actually very nicely connected. In 2013, it's just glued into the process. And this is a way, as Jean mentioned, that you can actually capture resource demand at an FTE level, at a role level, to forecast out what is your demand for resources should this project get accepted. So I'm just going to click on resource plan. And it's going to come up to this screen. And now I have what's called it's a blank resource plan. And I'm going to go into this option called build team. Everybody's familiar with build team here, if you know Project Server. And you'll see in our resource pool, what we've done is we've got both generic and named resources. So we've delineated certain resources as generic, yes or no. In this case, all the people we have are not generic, but all the roles are generic. So we're going to actually limit that list to the generic resources, and we just want to take, I need some analysts on this project, a couple of developers, PMO, and maybe a tester or two. What I want to do is take those roles, or the generic resources, and add them to my resource plan. I'm going to save that. And now what I'm going to start doing is actually start forecasting out how many of those resources I'm going to need throughout the life of this project. So what I want to do is I want to set a date range. I want to start this project immediately, because that's always the way it works. correct? Got to start today. And then I have the option here to calculate the utilization here either from a project plan or the resource plan. And I don't know if you want to explain that a little bit, what the differences are there.
So,
what's that?
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Go ahead. Yeah, it happens sometimes. Go ahead.
Does it work?
Yeah.
Whenever you go to the resource center and there's an option there to, you can select a group of resources and then hit resource availability. So you have this nice chart that shows the capacity and the availability. Based on the setting that you select here, so you have the option to let the system basically measure and calculate availability based on what's actually in the project, which doesn't make sense now because we don't even have a schedule yet.
No project schedule.
Or the resource plan. So that option is in the ribbon here, and in this stage, it makes sense to select the availability by resource plan. So the system is going to take into account the value that you put into the resource plan and would consider that to be assignment in some way or a request in that case.
Yep. And so what we can do is say, okay, we've got a three-month project. I don't want to do day by day. How I want to estimate this thing is on FTEs. How many people do I need in each role? Yes. There it goes again.
You need to resize the window. I think there's a graphic.
Resize the window? Yeah. It'll come back here. I love technology.
Yeah.
Come on.
Go back.
Come on. Maybe go to online and do it. That's why we have redundancy.
Okay, you have to go back to the beginning
back.
And
yeah, I'll go back.
And reload it.
That's unusual. Come on, baby.
Can you back to the project center?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Project? I'm going to do that. Let's go back.
Did you relate in any way to commit to the non-committed resources?
The commit to the non-committed resources? Meaning? Yeah, that's when you're doing actual named resources. So that's kind of when you're soft booking. We're going to get to that in a second. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So there is a setting in the resource plan, actually. It's also a setting at a project level where you can choose whether your request has been committed or if it's just in a proposed state. Then in the resource availability graph in a resource center, there's a checkbox that says include proposed booking, and it basically will let you select whether or not you want to display all these proposed bookings. So you have this this switch that you can use at the project level or the resource plan level to play with.
Okay. I'm just going to restart it here over in online. We'll do that. We're going to go through that process one more time. Yeah, it looks like we're back here. Okay. Sorry for the delay. This environment, I don't know what's going on. Okay. We're going to build out our resource plan one more time here. So we're going to go in and pull the generic resources, do some forecasting. And again, we're going to forecast from our resource plan. We're going to add resources that are generics. In this case, we don't know who they are. We know the roles. Come on, cloud.
There you
go. Here we go. Generics. We'll just add our analysts, developers, PMO, and our testers. We'll save that. And then we're just going to forecast out how much of their time we're going to need and how many of them we're going to need. So now we're doing it in 365 versus the on-premise. That's the only difference.
There you go.
Yeah, we're good. So we got a resource plan. And we can delineate the dates of the project, which we said starts immediately. Another giggle, ha ha ha. Yes, we're changing the time frame. And then we're going to do the work units. Instead of days or weeks, we're going to do FTEs, days or hours. So we're going to estimate in FTEs. And then we're going to do this, because it's a month-by-month, three-month project, we think we can estimate monthly or quarterly. So now we're going to be able to say, I'm going to need two analysts, then 2.5, then one towards the end of the project. So we're truly doing FTE-level planning here, which is one of the real benefits of a resource plan, is that you have the ability to do this. You can see I can do parts of a resource here as well. And then we're going to forecast from our resource plan. And we can save this, and it saves it in draft mode, but once we publish it is when it's going to make it visible in some of our views and reports and charts and graphs. Now the world can see it, right?
Yep.
Exactly. So we can always have a working version. It's almost like a project schedule where we're working on it, we save it, but once we publish it, then everybody gets their notifications. So this is really the first stage, is building that resource plan. And because we forecasted from the resource plan, when we go over to the resource center, we're going to be able to look at different assignments and allocations. And it's going to tell us, is that assignment coming from a project schedule, or is it coming from an actual resource plan? We'll close that out. And we followed that part of our initiation process, where it may be now we have a resource plan, and that's a part of our actual workflow. We can build that in here, too. So if I go back to my project center, what I can do is I have different views, and everybody's familiar with the project center. I can actually have views here that show me if I have my resource manager dashboard, total work dashboard, resource manager requires staffing. So I can start to see there are certain projects here that need to be staffed and other ones that don't by department. And these are all the ones that need staffing. So you could create different views and look at them by different information in this case. Requires staffing, yes or no. And these are all the projects I, as a resource manager, know I need to now go in and look at and go one by one and analyze, or I can highlight them. I can go over to the resource center and start to do some analysis now. So you can use some of the built-in tools in Project Server, from the resource plan to actually the project center, to start to give people visibility into what projects need to be staffed. Now from here, where we go is we typically go over to the resource center. This is typically where the functional managers and the resource managers, they're going to sit down for that communication and collaboration. And they're going to sit down and start to do some analysis. Who do we have? Who's working on what over what period of time? And this is where you have direct access to that enterprise resource pool. So based on your permissions, you're going to be able to see and do different things and see different subsets of information. There's different ways you can start to think about grouping your resources. So you can group them by function. A lot of people like to group their resources by what they do. You can group them by role. You can group them by project or program if you're in a project-focused organization. You can look at them in different ways. In this case, we're grouping our resources by role. So we're going to be able to look at, not only do I have my accountants and my analysts, I have all of the individuals that play those roles, and I can have people that have multiple roles. So I see I have Alex, I have Bonnie, I have Garth and Hatim, and then I have this generic role called an analyst. So what happens is during your demand process, people are assigning the generic role called an analyst in the resource plan, and that demand is going to start to add up. Then I'm going to have my actual availability and capacity, which is for all the other resources, which is going to go up and down based on their work and their availability. So what we can do as functional or resource managers is go in and say, well, I want to take a look at all of my resources. What are they working on? And what upcoming requests do I have for work that's coming into the pipeline? And the Resource Center is a great way to get visibility into this. This has been a great tool that's been in Project Server for years, what, since 2002 maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, a long time. And what we can see, and this is actually a really useful graph and chart. So on this chart we see on the left-hand column, we can see what's the total number of hours. On the bottom, we have it time scaled. And then we have a black line that's called capacity. And that's going to show us for our pool of resources, our subset of resources, what's the maximum capacity our group has.
Laser pointer.
What's that? Laser pointer. Sure, yeah. Now, does anybody have any idea why it goes up and down?
Month on not equal.
What is it? Work days per month. Anything else? Holidays. Yeah, any other reasons? Vacation, yeah. People go on vacation, right? They get sick, they quit. They do silly stuff, right? So reality is capacity is going to go and availability is going to go up and down. And you have to follow that in real time to understand, do you have more work than capacity, or do you have certain periods where you have a lot more demand for work and you don't have the people to do the work? So what we can see is early in the year, right, we're right at about capacity with our actual resources. These resources are reflected over here. So we see we have Bonnie, we have Molly, Pavel, and they're working. And we can see where we have people that are probably overallocated. Their bar chart is pretty darn big, right? What we see is, and this is typical in planning cycles, rolling wave, we have a gap period where we've got the next 4 months planned, but the 2-3 months after that, we really don't know. And then we're starting to get a lot of demand for new work, which is this green role, which is the analyst. Remember that? So as people are filling in those resource plans, if they're doing that consistently, you're going to start to see your demand go up, and you're also going to see a little bit of it in your current period, right? Remember that the current project we had to do, that work is going to start to show up here, so we can start to see if our capacity is overlaying our demand in some way. So the resource center is really a great place to start to do some of the initial analysis. And someone had mentioned the proposed bookings thing. We'll get into that in a little bit, and that's more about when I've decided now Jim is the right resource, I think. I want to propose Jim on 3 or 4 projects and then look at what's the implication of doing that. Yes? Do they affect? They shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
what's that? You can.
The question is, do generic resources impact the capacity line? Yes and no. Like, if you actually set the capacity of the generic resource to a certain value, 100, 500, et cetera, yes, it will. But maybe I've talked to a lot of different partners in that field, and one of their best practices is to say, capacity for generic resources should always be zero.
Zero.
Because there's no, they don't produce work. Yep. It's a placeholder. It's great to track demand, but a generic resource doesn't produce work. So the capacity should be set to zero.
That's the best practice. I mean, some of our clients say, I've got 5 analysts at 40 hours, set the capacity at 200 hours. The best practice is just set it at zero and watch the demand go up and down against that. That way you don't impact the capacity.
Yeah. And to get the real capacity, you should do what we've just done, which is basically go to the resource center, mm-hmm. have a view that groups by a role so that you know automatically how many named resources map to that role and select everybody at the same time to get the real capacity line.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
How does the admin time impact the capacity?
So the question is, how does the admin time impact the capacity? Admin time basically reduces the capacity of each resource or vacation when they enter that information in the timesheet, the same way calendar exceptions or public holidays do. So it actually reduces the capacity, the theoretical max of that resource, of each resource.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes?
If we're going to use generic resources in the portfolio view with the zero capacity, you're going to show us how that works, right?
I'll show you that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the other thing you can start to do in the resource center is if we remove that analyst, and we apply that, now we want to see the actual capacity and demand without all the new requests coming in. So if I just want to see a snapshot of everybody that's working today and not worry about future demand or current demand, this is a pretty good view into that. And below that, you have all the data. So we've got the chart and then the table below it that not only shows us the people and what they're working on and why they're overallocated, so you can start to have the discussion with, hey, I'd like to have Alex on my project in February or March, the problem is he's already overallocated. How are we going to deal with that? He's our best, he's our best .NET developer. Well, the problem is he's already working on a project he's got too many hours on, right? You can have that communication and collaboration because you now have the data sitting in front of you. And this is data that comes out of Project Server once you've fed it with good information.
Can you explain the include proposed
bookings? Mm-hmm. So when we go in and actually do the assignment of the resource, we can assign Garth or Alex to a project. We have the ability to actually commit him as an assignment, or we could propose him, which kind of puts a hold on that resource for a period of time. I guess that's the best way to put it. So it's I can propose him, and it doesn't create the assignment until I commit him to that actual task.
The resource plan,
the resource plan is separate.
Yeah.
So the resource plan sits above the project, really.
So there's a couple of questions about that booking type setting at the resource level. So we have that concept both in the resource plan and at the project level. And you can flip back and forth depending on whether your request has been approved or not.
Yeah, good point.
So by default, the resource capacity view here does not have that option selected. So well, theoretically, all those bars represent assignments that have been approved. But I don't know if you're, in your data set you have any proposed booking. But
I don't know. To see.
If you select that checkbox and just hit apply, then the bars should go up. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yep.
So if you put together a resource plan for a new project coming in, and you need an analyst and a developer, mm-hmm. you can then look at the analyst against the real analyst for a period of time, and you can look at the developers against the real developers. Mm-hmm. But how do I see when I can fit that project? Because I have to look at the project across both in order to say, I've got capacity available for both groups now in May. Whereas maybe if I just looked at one by role to see the real resources, I would see one group is available in March, but I can't do it in March because the other is not.
Yeah. So the question was, how can we look at resource availability per, not on a per role basis, which is the case here, but on a multi-role basis? And I think we'll get a glimpse of that in the resource constraint analysis, where we would have. You could compare all the different roles at the same time and see where those pockets of overallocation are and whether or not you can shift everything together.
Yep, we'll get to that.
Or whether or not you need to hire more people or more vendors. Or
yeah, exactly. So, and the key is in the resource center, you also have a breakout of all the requests coming in and where is that request, what's driving that? Is it a project schedule or is it a resource plan? So you can delineate between the two. So it's very nicely laid out. And then if you wanted to get more information, you can always go to the resource assignment level. Well, what is Joe working on that's so darn important? Well, let me show you. He's actually assigned to, Alex is assigned to 10 tasks on 5 projects, and here they are. So you can very quickly visualize that information to have the discussion and look at any gaps that are there. Right? So we can drill down now to the assignment and the task level if we want to have a really good planning discussion. Now we can get over, and the next step we're going to go into is the portfolio management, which is where we're headed next around the analysis. And before we leave that, I wanted to give you a quick snapshot from a reporting perspective. Reporting is really a key part of any resource planning process. There's some very simple reports that could be deployed. And this is an example of one that we've actually done for a client. It's an Excel services report. And what it shows us is, for each of the resources, what is the planned work and what is the variance right now? And for that, if we start to look at it, we can start to identify where we have very big problems. 8-hour variance in May, I may not care so much about. But if I look down here, a 48-hour delta in November, that may mean a lot more to me, right? So I can identify these challenges, and I can use Excel and Excel services reporting to do some cell highlighting and start to look at and identify any problems I have with my resource workload. And the nice thing about that is if you have any other data there, you can start to add it to your reports. So if I'm accessing some of the cubes or the OData behind the scenes with a Project Online, I can deploy different kind of reporting that's going to give my managers visibility that they can very quickly get access to from their desktops. So again, this is a standard Excel services report out of the tool. So we've gone into some of the things with the front-end planning. We're going to go into the portfolio analysis. I'm sure you're all familiar with some of the things this tool set can do from an analysis perspective. Where we're going to go here is really around portfolio selection, really over to the resource management part of this. So as we go through our life cycle, we define the properties of our portfolio, we're going to prioritize our projects, all the standard portfolio management things we're going to do, we review those, and then we're going to run different analyses. The first analysis is on cost, how much money do we have, and what are the right investments to make based on the budget we have. Once we've agreed upon that, we have a second constraint, and that's people. We may be able to afford the portfolio, but we may not have the people who can carry that out. And part of the portfolio management life cycle is taking it from the cost to the resources. That's a pretty big part of this. So if we go over to the cost section, just going to go to the baseline scenario here. You've all seen this probably ad nauseum, so I'm not going to get into that part. This is really a hidden part of the application that a lot of folks aren't very familiar with. Good work building it, by the way. So it's nice. We make our screen a little bigger. There's really two parts to this part of the application. When you think about it, if I look at a portfolio, the solution is actually going to tell us, in this situation, can I have the pointer again?
Sure.
Tend to walk around, grew up around a lot of Italians. In this scenario, in order to get the most value we can get from this portfolio, even though I have the money to afford it, is about 68 or 69%. Because I'm actually losing value down here, I can't deliver on certain projects here because I can't staff them. So this is a purely resource-centric view of our portfolio right now. So we're looking at a subset of our projects. It's saying, you know, I can't do some of these projects here, and can anybody guess why? What are some of the reasons I couldn't do projects? I don't have the resources? Okay. Any other reasons?
Budget.
If you look at the phasing of the work, what do you see? It's all starting about the same time. And if I have a finite pool of resources and I want all the work to start at the same time, the system's going to help us prioritize that and say there's certain projects here that based on dependencies, based on the resources you need, all that information, you're not going to be able to do unless you solve this problem. So if I think about the triple constraint, what are some of the things I can do? Any ideas? What's that? Yeah, I can move projects out, I can delay them, right? Or I could add resources, exactly. So we have both scenarios that we can address now. So if we want to extend projects out, let's say we go in here and we've got a project that starts in March. It's a pretty high priority project. What if I pushed it out till May? And what if I had another March project, if I pushed it out till April? So if I delay two of my strategic projects, will that help me bump other projects into the portfolio? What I can do is I can ask the system, will this work? And it's going to say, you know what, good news. By doing that, I'm moving a project in. So by delaying two projects, I can actually move a project into my portfolio. Now, at the same time, it may start moving other projects that are less strategic out of the portfolio. So it's really a dynamic engine that's going to make recommendations for us based on the staffing constraints and the resources that we have. So that's the first option, right? I can delay the work or I can shift the projects around. And I can run as many of these models as I want. I can save them. And this is really a great part of the application. And then, nicely, I can compare scenarios. So let's say I come up with three or four different ideas. In different scenarios, I've chosen to resource certain projects, not resource them, delay certain projects, and each bundle or each mix of projects is going to give us a different strategic value. Then it becomes a business discussion. Do we want to add more people? Do we want to delay the work? What do we want to do in order to get the most value from our investments in this portfolio? This is a great way to use the portfolio management capabilities in the tool to do your resource forecasting. The other option I have, and I think someone mentioned, is bring some people in, right? What if we hired some people? Not a bad idea. I'd do that, would you?
Sure.
Yeah, let's say we hired four people.
Resources are free, right?
They're free. So I just said that I'm going to hire four people. What is that going to do to my portfolio? Well, what you can see is, because I brought in four people, I'm now able to do two of my strategically top projects, right? Move them into the portfolio. That's pretty big, right? If executives want to do those projects and they're really important and I couldn't staff them before, now I've come up with a solution on how to staff them, that's great. But the question is,
the portfolio value increased by 12% almost?
Yeah, I went from 69 to 81%. So I'm now actually giving more value to the business. So I'm solving lots of problems with the portfolio management tools. The big question is, who should I bring in, right? How does the system know? Where's the magic happening behind the scenes? There's some reports here that are going to help us. There's one called a hired resource report. And what it's going to tell us is, you're going to hire four people. These are the four people you should hire. You should hire a marketing person to work on the customer service project, starting here and ending here, for this amount of hours. And if I had loaded costs in to my hourly rates, into my resources, then I could actually come up with a total cost. So that I can say, I know I've got a $15 million portfolio, but to do those other three projects staffing-wise, I need to add another $280,000 in cost to that. I can have a really complete discussion with my management team about resources and cost to wrap up the discussion on the portfolio. It's going to tell us we need product engineers on two or three of our other projects. How many hours? And on some of these, it may be a part-time role. Maybe I can outsource that or bring a consultant in, right? Other ones, I may bring an FTE in because it's a longer-term need internally. So the portfolio management engine is going to make recommendations for us to help solve some of our challenges here.
Or a PPM partner.
Or a PPM partner.
Question? So the question is, does the system make the decision based on hours or cost for a resource? So If you go to, so there is the other report with the overallocation and reallocation.
Yes.
Are you going to go to that?
The
demand and supply?
Yeah, I'm going to go to demand supply.
Okay, demand surplus.
Deficit surplus, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, you want to explain? Okay, this is good.
Then you can highlight overallocations or underallocations.
I have it here. I was going to go over the requirements detail.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess to kind of answer your question, where all this logic is coming from behind the scenes is what the solution is doing. It's starting to look at over and under allocations with resource with generic roles. Yeah. So you can see here, if I go over, I've got a listing of all of my roles on the left-hand side at the top, and then I've got the FTE count required for each role throughout the life cycle to fulfill the needs of this portfolio. And it's going to highlight for me any deficits I may have. For instance, product engineers, if you remember, I have a gap in product engineers for certain months. Yeah. When I look down at the bottom, in the non-selected projects, it's going to show me what those specific FTE gaps are. And this should look a little bit like a lot of spreadsheets people use today. Yeah, it does? Okay. So I can see that I have gaps. I need a trainer on the software benchmarking project. And if I want to do that project, I need that kind of a resource. Likewise, I need some product engineers right down here in March, April, and May on the voice recognition product.
Yeah. So to answer your question, yes, this is based on capacity by role.
Yes. It's all fed by that resource. The key is that resource plan. When I set up the portfolio, there's the option to use the resource plan to drive this. And if I check that box, then I have to have those resource plans, which is going to drive all of this. It's a key part of that process. Otherwise, this part of the tool doesn't quite work as well. And the good news is, as I build different portfolios with different projects, as long as I have resource plans or forecasts associated, I can run these models, and I can get this kind of visibility out of it. Yes, in the back?
So, is this only taking into account future
and pipeline projects, or is this in current projects as well? So, the question is, does the system take into
account
future projects, proposals, or just projects in flight? You can run a simulation on any project in any stage in the system, and basically something we didn't show, when you create a new simulation, you can select the list of projects you want to put into that simulation. So it can just be 10 out of 100 or the whole pool of projects. This is up to you. You can filter by department. Are you going to show that now?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. So this is when you create a new analysis, yeah, you have a project selection option. It depends. If you have lots and lots of projects, we usually recommend trimming that list down to a more manageable size.
Less than 200 is the best practice.
Less than 200. You can do that by time period, by department, or specific custom fields. It's up to you, but you have control over the type of projects that you put in the system in the simulation.
Yep, and typically what we have our most clients do is they do an annual planning phase where they're doing all the pipeline projects, and then the ones that are accepted on maybe a quarterly basis, they actually look at the incoming project requests against the current ones, and then they do an analysis based on that. That's a pretty good cycle to get into.
Just a variation on that question. So when you have an overallocated resource that you put there in red,
it's a gap between.
So, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just repeating the question.
Yeah, okay.
The question is your overallocation driven by only proposals or in-flight projects as well? Is that correct?
Yeah.
It's both, or it depends on the selection that on the project you've selected in this case.
So if you're running a project that's not selected,
I'm not sure about this.
Well, we're looking at the roles, remember. So we have a certain number of FTEs available, and then we're trying to make a selection based on the total FTEs we have. Where's our gaps? We either need more people, right? So we have five analysts available, and in order to get the work done, I have to either shift it out or add more resources to that role. So it's based on that role.
Yeah, if you want a full picture,
if you
yes.
want a full picture of the whole portfolio,
that's
current and pipeline, yes, every project needs to be in that portfolio. And in reality, some may be beyond this life cycle phase. You've already chosen them, but you still want to put them in that portfolio analysis.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you just want to run a cost analysis, maybe you could only select proposals in this case, because in that situation, maybe cost is more important for proposals. But as soon as you touch resources, obviously you have to take into account in-flight projects. Question?
When you do resource modeling, you've got a project that you decide needs to shift back
you're shifting a single project?
Dependency. I don't know about dependency in time, but there's an option where when we do the selection, there's an option that allows you to link project together, which basically means if the project is selected, then these two other projects need to be selected, and vice versa if they're excluded. So there's this type of relationship for from a selection perspective. I'm not sure about time. If you have cross-project links, I don't think this is is taken into account.
I mean, so you're saying you're shifting one project out, and you want to know the impact on the others from a resource perspective, correct? So if you opened it in project and you shifted the dates out, once you went to the resource views, resource usage or the resource sheet, you'd be able to see all the commitments that resource has across their projects. So once you made your change to your project, you would see potentially the other stuff they're working on and if it would impact you in any way. Not in here. No, this is much more of a planning, of kind of a forward planning tool. I think if, are you in the life cycle of delivering the project?
Even in the planning phase.
Yeah. Okay. We could probably take a look at that afterwards and come up with some ideas. Yeah. In the back?
So we've got pipeline management and current plans. Pipeline management roles and current plans are using actively meeting resources. And the portfolio report is just based on roles. How is the current main resource and the current role that is the role? And how is that displayed in the report? How could it be?
So the question is, you're using roles in upfront planning,
yep.
And then you're using named resources in the actual execution. And if you roll them into a portfolio, what do they have in common? How can you look at a common picture of your resources?
Yes.
That's it? That's a good point. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably more of a business intelligence play there, I think, in the reports.
Yeah.
A little bit stumped on that one.
I'm not sure about this.
Because this is all generally, the portfolio component's really based on roles and doing role-based planning. So if you start pulling individuals in there, I'm not exactly sure how that would play out.
Yeah, I would look, I need to look it up. Maybe ask
we
someone.
We can do it. We do have some different kinds of reports a lot of our clients use where they roll it up by role. So you can see for all the engineers, you know, here's the forecasted demand and here's the actual workload. You could do a lot of that through the business intelligence though, certainly.
Yeah.
So we've gone through the portfolio analysis. You're making some decisions on the right portfolio of projects to do based on the resources. You're trying to make smart staffing decisions. That's really what the tool is designed to enable you to do, to be strategic about those decisions, determine how many people do you have and who's the right fit for that, which is what we're going to get to next from an assignment perspective. Got it? So we've gone in, we've built that portfolio analysis. And you can see one of the things John had mentioned is the project dependencies. So you can actually set dependencies between projects as you're doing your top-level planning. Say projects are in, one is in, the other is in, one is out, the other's out, one is a finish to start relationship, and the portfolio management engine is going to acknowledge those things as it goes through its planning. So doing that kind of that staged planning can really help as well. So when we get down to it, we start doing the actual planning. A lot of that is going to happen in Microsoft Project. Everybody here a project user? I hope so.
On 2013.
Anyone on 2013 yet? Yay. Good. Working well?
Good.
All good? All good. Great. So as you know, when you create a new project request, attached to that request can be a template, a project schedule template. So based on that, we could have gone in, initiated a project based off of a template, and it's all based off of our generic resource assignments. So this is where you make the transition from the resource plan. And you can actually go in and there's an option to flip a resource plan into a build team from enterprise as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, a lot of our clients do that and then they do the top planning, but then we're in our schedule. And that's where we've got the roles that map up to the FTEs. And we say we've got a project manager, we've got an analyst, we've got a team member. Now we want to do the actual assignments. And this is where we can do the soft and the hard booking of the resources. Now the PM is given the resource and they go in and they forecast the workload. So let me just insert some work here. You've got 20 hours here. So everybody's going to have a different project. They're all different, but they're based off templates. So when we go to staff the project, we're going to go out to what's called build team from enterprise. And most people should know this if you've been using Project Server for years. And this is a way you can go out to the enterprise resource pool. So I can take a look and say, okay, based on this project, I know I need 1,000, this project's been accepted, I need 1,000 analyst hours, I need PMO, I need project managers. Let's take a look and match that up to other analysts in the organization. So what we can do is we can do some skills matching. And you remember in the resource pool, we had allocated different roles, and then we had individuals in those roles. We're going to use the build team to actually match that up and do the actual assignments.
Yeah. This is a magic button. So to let you understand what happens when you click on match, it actually uses custom field in this case. When you create your resource custom field, there's an option, there's a checkbox that says, use this field for generic resource matching, mm-hmm. Which is kind of hidden. But this is what this match button uses. So if you create a custom field called roles and you select that option, and then you create a generic resource for each of those roles and you add people and you set those roles for these people, mm-hmm. the match button in this case will use that specific field for matching. Mm-hmm. And you can pick any other field if you want, if you can pick RBS or department. So this is actually a dynamic button that will basically do select the field that you want.
Yep. And you'll see here we're matching up to the role containing the specific role we have that we've chosen. So just like Yamish mentioned, we're matching it up to the analysts. There's also another magic checkbox here, show availability. So I'm forecasting this project. Show me, of this subset of resources, who has availability during this period of time. It's going to go out to the resource pool, and it's going to pull availability based on all the information the system has. So I can see some people have more or less availability than others. And from here, I can say, these are my top three people. I can graph their availability, and it takes me right back to the resource center. Right? So I'm using the same tools as I do my analysis through the process, even before I assign one of the resources, to make sure that's the right person. And there was a question about different booking types. So if I do my analysis, I think Robin is the right resource. I can replace the analyst with Robin. And then I can do what's called a soft booking or proposed booking here. And that's where I'm holding Robin for the project. But until I commit Robin, she doesn't see any assignments. It doesn't show up on her timesheet. None of that stuff actually happens. And once I've committed her, she's now committed. I'll see her name show up. And then when I publish the plan out, then on her timesheet, which we'll go to next, she's going to be able to see all of her tasks, be it project, non-project activity. She can provide us with the updates on those. The other nice thing about this, and I don't know if you're familiar with the team planner, which is really a visualization. It's almost like a Gantt chart for your resources. That's an ugly Gantt chart. Let me move it over a little bit. It's a way you can visualize your resource demand and capacity here. Whee! This is a great addition in the 2010 version. Move over a little bit. Whee! There we go. So I can see what my resources are working on. When they show up as over-allocated, so before Project 2010, if someone showed up over-allocated, you would just see a bunch of numbers, right? Now you can actually see visually what people are working on, what other projects they're working on, and you can actually start to determine, do I have people that have more assignments than they have time? And how I can get to that is, again, go to the resource usage view. If I've got different resources here, testers, Robin, and then I can see what Robin's working on, and if she has any other work on any other projects as well. It's going to start to aggregate work from other projects here, too. Yes?
So the question is, can we see the actual assignments or tasks from other projects? It's going to depend on the permissions, because as a project manager, maybe I'm using Robin here on this project. She might be committed to other projects at the same time, but if the security model is set up in such a way that I actually don't have permission to view those projects, I just can't see what we call the SRA, which is a summary resource assignment. It's just a roll-up of the assignment and just have the project title. In most cases, I don't have the detail of the assignments.
You don't have to open the other projects in order to see the assignments from different projects if you have authorization.
I believe you do. I think if there's an option, if I remember correctly about the team planner, when you have, I think it's called like other projects and commitments. If you double click on that and you have the permission to view that project, it would load that information for you.
Yep. So you see here it says other projects and commitments. So yeah. I can see Jan is overbooked. If I click on that, it's going to show me what project it is.
Yep.
And then if I go back to resource usage, so you can see I can very visually see where people have over allocations and what other work they're working on.
Yeah.
This is through project client.
Yeah. Yep. But there's a permission check first to make sure that you
right.
have
yep.
permission to view that.
Go to Robin here. and I see other projects and commitments, and it'll show me at the project level what else, what other projects they're working on and what the hours are. So I can see where people are over-allocated right from project. Yes?
What about skill, though? Because you can have, you know, 25 developers, but you might need a web developer or
Yeah, you can have primary and secondary skills, and then using the custom fields, you could have different skills. So I could have a VB.
Can you just add another filter at where you were selecting the people that were available? You just put the.
Yeah, think of it when we had the. When we had the roles, we could have, I need a person with a developer role that also has, you know, level one Java and level two VB, and it would filter down to just that subset of roles. You can get very specific. We did a session yesterday with NNS where they talked about all the roles, and they've got about 100 and some generic roles. So.
About roles, and is this still working?
You on?
I don't know.
This one? Huh? Talk loud.
So that was a question about roles and skills. There was also another resource management session on Monday that was talking about this. So what is the difference between a role and a skill? How about people with multiple skills and stuff like this? And there again, there's a best practice, I would say, which is not enforced in the system, but usually roles are one person has only one role, or at least a primary role, because this is necessary for capacity planning. If someone has a DBA can work on SQL and Oracle, well, his capacity should be rolled up to what? So usually you start with, you have a custom field for role that is that only allows single value selection. And if you want to have another custom field for skills that would allow multi-selection, this is a secondary field. One of the good things about custom fields in a product is you could, if you really want to have like the same table structure or the same lookup table for roles and skills, you can. You can have two custom fields actually hooked up to the same lookup table. Or you can have like a primary role and secondary roles looking at the same lookup table. But the best practice is, especially for capacity planning, is that people should only have one primary role or job title. I mean, you call it the way you
want. Primary, if you get down to a very detailed level, it tends to get a little confusing. But you can certainly build your role hierarchy in there. And skills are, you know, a subset of that.
Yeah. I'll think of a couple of ways to do that.
Yep.
So the question was, how can a resource have, is there a way to have different roles or different skills for a project?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is people are going to play different roles on different projects. That's just the way it goes. They're going to have generally a single role in the organization. They are a project manager or an analyst, but they may do different things on different projects, right? Sure. You could probably do a custom field or something. Well, we can come up with some ideas. We have 1 minute. Yeah, let's visit the slide. Yeah, and the last thing I would say is from a time capture perspective, we've got about a minute to go and then we'll answer some questions. You want to try to capture all the time. So if we go into my tasks or my timesheets, you'll see we have project work. We also have non-project activities. We want to try to capture, keep the lights on, break, fix, things that take 40 or 50% of people's time, as well as things like vacation and sick and jury duty, so we get a full picture of what a resource is working on. We want to try to get the look at the full 40 and then start to break that down. What are people working on so we can do the analysis and share that with management? If we find people are spending more time on maintenance when they're really good at project work, we may want to shift them around and put lower dollar or lower value resources on that kind of work. So it'll allow us the data to get the right information out. I think we're going to wrap up here. So just wrapping up, the key is really, it all begins with the enterprise resource pool, as we talked about in the beginning. Setting up your resources, determining things like roles and skills, setting up max capacity for your different individuals, and then understanding your project management lifecycle. And at each phase, resource management is going to play a role. I mean, without people, you can't do projects, right? It's just reality. So if you think about it in the early phase, when you're creating a project, you're getting ideas, you're getting work requests in. And those requests come in the form of FTE plans, resource plans, or they could be project schedules if you build project schedules in the beginning. Resource plans are a really good way to do it at a light, top-down level. And then you estimate based on what the requester knows. During the selection phase, we're going to look at different portfolios or groupings of potential work and potential projects. Managers are going to review. Uh-oh.
Okay.
We'll finish up here. Managers are going to get to review that. They'll be able to do some analysis and start to use the portfolio analysis tools to run some scenarios and come up with some potential models, model solutions. Instead of lining up 10 project schedules, you can go to the portfolio analysis section, look at the roles, and run scenarios and shift projects in and out. It's a great tool you might want to think about using. During detailed planning, that's where the PMs get to go forward. They're going to go into Microsoft Project, as we showed you. They're going to be able to do the assignments, do some what if, and do some analytics using the same tools, and start to allocate resources to actual work. And then you can start tracking and managing the work through things like My Tasks, timesheets, and the news feed. So you're getting actuals in. And a really big part of that is not only actuals, but remaining work. I assigned you 40 hours. You've done 20. You need 30 more. I need to know that as a project manager so I can manage that delta and manage my project to successful completion. So capturing actuals and getting people in the habit and the culture of giving you back how much remaining work there is, it's really a cultural shift for a lot of folks. I think we're out of time. We'll skip the case study. Okay, we're out of time. You'll get a copy of this deck. You want to wrap up?
Yeah. Thanks everyone for joining.
Yep, thank you. Thanks.